Hello and welcome to a very, very special New Year's Eve year-end episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the podcast where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I'm Patrick, and I'm here for probably the last time for a while with Chris.
I'm Chris. I'm here.
And Steven.
Hello.
And guys, you know, listeners, if you listen to our last episode, you know that Chris and Steven are going to be leaving the show after this episode, which we're very sad about.
Feels weird.
Yeah. Feels weird.
It does.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell? We have been doing this, and we acknowledged this last episode, but we've been doing this since 2017. 7 years, the three of us. So it's a big transition. It's a positive one, though, I think. As Chris mentioned last episode, there's no drama. We're all still pals. These guys are going to be back on occasion, at least to guest and review some movies still. But you
we'll
guys
be part of
just
the community.
Thought it was,
we're yeah. still going to be interacting with y'all.
You're going to be on Discord. Yep. But you guys decided it was time to move on. Do you want to touch on that again at all now or later in the
you
show?
You know, we're here to talk about the end of the year and participate in one of our most hallowed Amon traditions, recapping the year. I want to do that, and then we can get all the feels out.
Yeah, we'll take a walk down memory lane.
Yeah, memory lane.
So we're going to do the thing we do every year. We always give out our silly little Amon awards. So today we're going to be going through our standard categories. We always rank we choose our favorite movie that we watched for the podcast, our least favorite movie that we watched for the podcast this year, our favorite new horror movie of the year. So that's outside of stuff that we watch for the show, just new releases.
Unless you really like The Pope's Exorcist. Oh, that was 2020.
Oh, yeah. That would have been a dank joke. No. Best horror discovery of the year. So that's something we didn't watch for the show and also didn't necessarily come out this year. Just any horror media that we, you know, stumbled upon and enjoyed in 2024. And then finally, of course, the most important award, throwing back to one of our earliest episodes that I still honestly can't believe we're making this reference. And I think it'll probably even outlive you guys. I think I'm not going to stop talking about Jay and the Spirit of Jay. We're going to give out the Spirit of Jay award. And this is just any character that best represents the just unforgettable screen presence of Jay, the Indian exorcist from the film 1920 London, Fear Strikes Again. And if you're like, what the fuck is he talking about right now? Go back to, I think it's episode 3 of this podcast. Listen to that. You'll learn all about Jay, why we loved him so much.
Fear Strikes Again.
1920 London, Fear Strikes Again. And so we're going to pick who best, out of all the Amon movies we watched this year, exemplified the spirit of Jay. So,
and you know what? To bring the two threads together here, like, it's a pretty slim year for Amon,
yes.
You know, and that kind of speaks to, I think, our dwindling productivity that, you know, I haven't been happy with. I'm sure our fans haven't been happy with, and just sort of how hard it's been for Steven and I to just kind of keep up with the grind of doing this thing and saying, oh, we're gonna switch to monthly for the summer. Oh, it's fall. We're still going to pretend it's summer, though. Oh, it's winter, but we're still going to pretend it's, it's not sustainable way of doing business here. And then,
good for anybody.
Looking back on the list and just kind of seeing how short it is of our episodes in 2024 versus years past. I mean, when we started off, we were doing this weekly.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Insane to me.
But
I don't know how.
We had that dog in us.
That's how we did it. No, we weren't all living in Monroe at that point.
No.
We were living up here, but Chris and I were in Monroe.
Yeah, we were driving.
Yeah.
Wow, I forgot you were still in Monroe then.
I moved back for a period of time.
Right.
Almost a year, I think.
Damn.
Yeah.
Well, we're already starting the walk down memory lane that we said we were going to wait
here
on.
Here come the waterworks.
Yeah. But you know, it seemed like a good thing to point out there. Because, we only did, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 episodes before this one.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, slimmer year than usual. So actually, in some ways, I enjoyed that because it was way easier to make my picks.
Yeah.
Because usually when I do this year-end episode, I go back through everything. And I'm like, what? I barely remember the title of this movie. What the hell? What? And usually when we do this, I re-listen to multiple episodes to remind myself what the hell even watched. Even especially for the worst Amon movie award, I'm like, I have to remember what this completely forgettable movie was so I can figure out what was the most forgettable of the year.
Oh, well, trust me, I had the same struggle this time, and I did not listen back.
Okay. This time I didn't need to listen back. I actually did have at least a decent memory of everything. So, but anyways, long story short, we'll probably have some more content coming your way next year. I'm hoping to kind of pick up the pace, but we have slimmer pickings for the awards of this year.
Well, and importantly, before we begin, we all need to crack open a case of Auld Lang Syne.
A case, I think, is called for.
I got mine right here.
I think a barrel of Auld Lang Syne.
Yeah.
God knows what I'm going to be talking like at the end of this episode.
Let me do a little, let's see if I can do a pour on Mike. There's some Auld Lang Syne. Here's to you, listeners. Here's to our final year-end episode together. Here's a little cheers for you.
Little cup of holiday cheer. What does Auld Lang Syne mean to you?
Oh, that's such a good question. And I think we should offer a little context here for why we're talking about this stupid shit. Like, so Chris, I think it was the first ever year-end episode. Chris was like, you know, we're going to get together. We're going to have a cup of Auld Lang Syne. And me and Steven immediately lost our minds. And we were like, what? And Chris is like, what? Like, what's your problem?
Problem? I think you literally just said problem.
Yeah, he question did. Mark. And we're like, Auld Lang Syne's not something you drink, but you genuinely thought it was. Yeah. And well, we're not laughing at you.
The lyrics of the song are what? We'll have a cup of kindness yet.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah. So there's a cup mentioned in the song.
Yeah.
And I, instead of a cup of Auld Lang Syne makes no less sense than a cup of kindness.
I mean, to be fair, I couldn't tell you what the hell Auld Lang Syne means.
It's a je ne sais quoi nostalgia.
Mm-hmm. Boomer shit.
It's like we just won World War II.
Yeah.
We're happy about that, but we also have a lot of trauma. It won't be an Amon episode if we didn't mention trauma. And
it wouldn't be a horror discussion.
I mean, trauma, as Jamie Lee Curtis would say.
And you know, we got bittersweet nostalgic feelings.
Yes.
Yeah.
We did come up with some fucked up recipe for. Oh yeah, because we said like mix together like our drinks of choice. So
yeah,
it was like
some red wine, some white wine.
You guys
wine,
are
a
so much deeper in the lore than me. I don't remember any of this shit.
Yeah, it's like mix up a Labatt for Chris, some white wine or red wine for you, Steven.
Specifically, a Coppola Diamond Collection Chardonnay.
Tonight,
for
me, some red wine. I feel like if I picked my normal favorite drink, like probably a whiskey of some sort. So just an absolutely unholy
concoction. Take a whiskey
concoction.
Drink. Take a vodka drink.
And three parts Robitussin.
Yeah.
And if you don't, and if you, and if you don't drink, that's fine too.
What does Auld Lang Syne mean to you, though, Steven, to your original question?
I mean, I think you answered it best.
Okay.
I think it's just, it really is more of a meme than anything.
It is, yeah.
It's taken on new significance tonight, though, as we're recording. Mm-hmm. And to me, Auld Lang Syne means whatever each of us individually enjoys the most while we spend time together reviewing the year.
I feel like I'm coming back from World War II. How long did World War II last? Not as long as this podcast.
Honestly, wow, that's fucked up to imagine.
We don't talk about that in the museum.
Almost twice as
but they
long.
They will.
This shit lasted almost twice as long as World War II.
Next time we go to New Orleans, there's going to be a plaque in the World War II museum about us. Oh, fuck. Let's get to these awards.
Get to the awards.
Best Amon movie of the year. Your favorite movie that we watched for the podcast in 2024.
I got it. I go first.
Chris
you
is so excited. He's
okay,
ready to go.
I got a good segue, but maybe
all
right, you
too. I respect the segue. Go for it.
Shadow in the Cloud.
Going back to World War II. Going back to
World War II. That is a good segue.
That was a fun surprise. I mean, I'll never forget Chloe Grace Moretz falling out of a bomber plane and then an explosion from another plane below launching her back up into the plane. How crazy, you know, a World War II movie that takes the notion of gremlins seriously and includes actual gremlins.
I'm just going to piggyback because I have the exact same one.
Okay.
And I said this on the episode when we reviewed this already, but that movie is the kind of thing that I do this for. Like,
why else would you watch it?
Right? I would never in a million years pick that out of the queue. I'd be like, period piece? Doesn't really look like horror, so this is not what I'm looking for right
Max
now.
Max Landis.
Yeah, Max Landis. And it's just such an unpredictable combination of elements that works mostly really well and is so fun, so memorable, and I'm so glad I actually had a reason to watch it. So, hands down, my favorite of this year.
Couldn't have said it better. What do you got, Chris?
Yeah, I can't believe you guys are on the same page on that. My favorite movie, Look Away. Am I crazy?
My that's least the... favorite movie.
Well, that's a good
Jason
segue.
Isaacs one?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well, that's a good segue, too. No, Look Away. I mean, look, first of all, this is, and you know, maybe we're weaving retrospective into our business at hand. Seems to be that kind of night. Because Look Away is it's not the archetypical movie that, like, I wanted to do this show to watch. It's not an especially good movie. But, like, when I think about the movies you see in the queue, where you're like, who the hell would ever watch that movie?
Yeah.
I think a movie's like Look Away. And that's sort of like the, you know, what the heart of this show for me. And we all have like slightly different flavors of what we like to do on the show. And that's awesome.
Sure.
But, I like these like very low budget, like schlocky horror films that often are just dreadful, but like I feel like I'm the only person in the world watching them. And Look Away is that movie, but it was also extremely entertaining. You know, you had the girl in the mirror. The things I remember.
The masturbation scene, is that what you're referring to?
I forgot about that until you even said it. Swear to God.
Oh my God. I'm trying to remember now. You used some incredibly crass term to describe that scene.
I said she was cranking it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So yeah.
Nothing to be proud of.
It's an explicit film, and like there's some gross stuff in that movie, but like just. When the girl comes out of the mirror and is just like talking shit to everybody, I was screaming at the TV, and that's what I like. And so yeah, like, I don't know. Is it like, I don't know, the best movie? Like, I mean the classically the best movie we probably watched is probably like X, right? Like
I just ignored
that film, but yeah, that's not an A-mon.
That's
movie,
not A-mon. Okay. No.
I mean, we did watch it for me, but you know what? I mean, I like X a lot, but I like Shadow in the Cloud more.
Yeah.
I had more fun. And again,
that's
I love
a hot
X.
Take.
I know. I mean, I will always remember Look Away for that insane scene of the girl undressing completely gratuitously and unnecessarily in front of Jason Isaacs playing her father and him just like screaming at her like, not to.
Don't do that.
So weird. And I don't even really remember the context at this point, but it was such a strange fucking scene.
Yeah.
Well, I chose it as my worst film, which is a good segue, good segue, I think, in the next category.
Next category.
Because I just couldn't remember it. And then I today just had a flashback to that scene in the mirror and was like, okay, if that's all I remember about a movie, it probably wasn't very good.
Yeah.
That was an insane one, though. I mean, we obviously had fun talking about it. It was like an X-rated Lifetime film, if my limited memory serves correct.
Yeah.
The female, the adult female lead in that was also notable, wasn't she? I don't remember who else was.
Was it Mira Sorvino?
Yeah, Mira Sorvino.
Oh yeah,
Mira Sorvino.
Yeah,
it's all coming back to me now.
Yeah. There we go.
But we love an instructional title too. That's been kind of a hallmark of the Iman journey.
Don't kill it.
Those are my favorite.
Don't breathe. I mean, we didn't do Don't Breathe, but I love an instructional title in general.
The best instructive title of all time. Again, I love how we're weaving in the retrospective. Mm-hmm. The best instructive title that we've done on this show, and the worst movie maybe we've ever, not the worst. Second worst maybe. Be Afraid.
Wait, what was Be Afraid?
Be Afraid was about shadow people.
Oh
God, maybe we should just like go over our list. That the cornfield? There was something weird that happened.
Or no, that's Petite. Yeah.
It's the one that started off with the guy screaming in that gravelly voice.
Oh, okay.
I'll go on the cornfield.
I thought that was Petite. I
vaguely recall that.
No, yeah. Wow. And that involves shadow people.
Ugh.
My favorite one, it's not really an instructive title, but it's close, is there's someone inside your house, which is like kind of a warning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's never anybody that isn't supposed to be in the house in the movie.
Mm-hmm. That's a great title. Terrible
That's
movie.
Not true. There's Terrible. A killer that comes in your house in that movie.
Yeah, but isn't it his house? Or something like that?
No!
There's something in that
That's
where it's
the movie
like,
with the Nazi artifact collector, right? Yeah.
Everybody's invited. There's never anybody there who isn't supposed to be there, like, on a social contract
three
basis.
People get killed by home invaders in that movie.
You remember it better than I do.
Yeah, much better.
You're like RFK. Now you've gone beyond my expertise. That's a deep cut reference. Shit. But, yeah. Anyway.
Okay, so Patrick, what's your least favorite Amon movie of 2024?
The worst Amon movie of 2024 for me was The Bridge Curse.
Yeah, that was a close second.
Yeah. I agree. That was mine too.
Okay, yeah, just absolutely impenetrable. It's just like, what
incomprehensible.
Incomprehensible. What the hell was even going on in that movie? I never quite understood. There was that insane twist with like double casting.
Yes.
That just, if you listen back to that episode, you can just hear all our brains unravel on the mic, trying to understand it better together. That was a mess. Chris, what do you have to add to this?
I mean, listen, we've been doing this show for 7 years. What you should know by now, what's my least favorite thing to see in a horror movie?
People walking around in a house in the dark.
Yes. People walking around in the dark. And The Bridge Curse had a lot of it. It just had a lot of it.
There was that double casting thing, which like was so confusing that I don't even remember what it was exactly. I just like I remember getting halfway through the movie and not realizing that these people that were watching on screen are supposed to be
different people
that and I thought I was
there
racist.
Were two separate timelines
because it was so there was no like narrative device to really link it together clearly.
But, like I kind of in hindsight I kind of respect the audacity of that, like it's I don't know,
I respect the basic concept, and I can envision a world in which that was a jaw-dropping twist.
Yeah.
This is not the world where that happened.
The movie just wasn't good apart from that.
Yeah.
No. You know, that twist could have worked for me in a different movie.
The bridge wasn't scary. The curse wasn't scary. So you throw all this other formal shit onto it, and
it
just sank like a lead balloon for me.
It was, to cite another Chris meme, cinematic malpractice.
Yeah.
It was just the formally, it didn't make sense. The narrative did not make sense. It was not assembled in a way that the human brain is prepared to process or make any sense of, and that is not a compliment. I can think of movies where I could say that, and it's a compliment. It's not to The Bridge Curse. Mm,
yeah. You know, this is from last year, but it reminded me of The Black Coat's Daughter.
Oh, my God, yes.
Because it did the same thing, or it's like not playing fair with your casting. Like, this is actually the same character. Well, then why is it a different fucking actress?
Who looks the same? Yeah, that was crazy, too.
Except The Black Coat's Daughter is like 7,000 times the movie that The Bridge Curse is, for all its flaws.
It is, and only becoming more relevant because it was remade into Long Legs.
Well, on that note, let's talk about some of the best horror of 2024, which
are any of us going to say Long Legs?
Many, I will not. Many.
I wrote in my notes. Hold on, let me pull them up.
We've had some hot takes on like the big horror movies of this year. Like there was not a lot of love for Long Legs or Alien Romulus in this group.
Yeah, I mean Long Legs was fine. I had a good time watching Long Legs.
I wrote in my notes the best of the year. It was supposed to be Long Legs.
It was supposed to be.
And I haven't seen Nosferatu yet, so it's got to be The Substance.
Yeah, same.
Rock solid fucking banger of a movie. One of the most it reinvigorated me. I love everything about it, aesthetically and otherwise. So fun. And, you know, for some people, it seemed to outstay its welcome a little bit in the third act. I was on board for every decision in this thing. I can't wait to get the disc when it comes out, I think in January. I've considered getting a Mubi free trial for 30 days to watch it again. Mm. I haven't done that yet, but I, this movie fed my soul.
Mm-hmm. Great, great film. You saw it too, Patrick, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that your pick or not?
It is not my pick.
Okay.
What's your pick?
I don't know. You guys do your bit. I'll throw in a few words because it's up there for me.
But. Yeah. No, the substance is, you know, take it back to my friend William Friedkin, you know. you go to the theater, Billy. You know you're going to see a piece of shit.
Yeah.
The Substance was the first movie I've seen, at least since Nope, but maybe beyond Nope, where I could walk out and be like, that movie on no level was a piece of shit.
That's right, wild. Yeah.
No, I mean, that might say more about my ticket buying habits than anything else, but yeah.
Wait,
no.
What about Avatar The Way of Water? That came out after Nope.
Yeah, but
it was a piece of shit.
I love Avatar The Way of Water, but like, I do acknowledge that on some level it's a piece of shit. Like, you know, it's just not part of the machine film.
Yeah.
You know? Mm. Yeah. And there's all
Did
sorts,
you say it's not a film?
Not a capital F film.
Oh.
No. I mean, yeah. There's a lot of things I admire about Avatar The Way of Water that I could get into. Maybe I will, but
not on this podcast.
But no, it was just a really good movie, and it's the rare movie, The Substance, that I've been recommending to everybody who I think won't be weirded out at me after they watch it, which is an important caveat.
I get that, but I've even recommended it to those people because I'm like, you could very possibly be won over by this. It is such a the Demi Moore element of it is such a Trojan horse that I'm like, I don't know how you could, even if you're not a horror person, if you're not into all the 80s, you know, Screaming Mad George, Brian Usna goop of it all, I think that performance anchors it so well that it's one of those ones that can make people realize that they actually like horror, like Rosemary's Baby.
100%.
You know?
Yes. Yes. I have suggested it to people who aren't really typical horror people, just because I think it connects with people that well, especially women.
Yeah, and it's about important things in a way that is at once broad, but I think because of the horror, it actually becomes kind of subtle. It might affect you in a way that you're not expecting.
Hmm.
I don't know. Masterpiece. Patrick, what was your favorite non-Amon horror movie of 2024?
Well, I want to give The Substance some flowers first because I also absolutely loved it and can't wait to rewatch it. I am on the side of it's a little long, it's a little baggy. Thematically, like ideas-wise, it didn't leave me chewing on much or thinking about much other than visuals. You know, I'm remembering so many visuals from that, but it's not like it gave me any new ideas that I didn't have already as far as like beauty norms or how we treat aging people, particularly women, particularly in the media. It's a wonderful film. I don't want to knock on it. I saw the TV Glow. Ugh, fucked me up, and I'm still thinking about it. You know, there's the question of, is it horror? I think absolutely. It's a weird melange of a lot of different things, but definitely horror is in there. And I'm still thinking about what it has to say about nostalgia and identity. And I can't wait to rewatch it. It is on Max right now, so that's I have no excuse not to. But go check out I Saw the TV Glow. It's fucking weird. It will leave you with weird feelings. You'll be thinking about it for a long time. And I still am. So I got to give that my best horror of 2024.
I don't know why, but I still feel I was excited about it. And yet I still feel like I need to be sold on it. There's something about it that looks like a lot of movies that came out indie, like kind of queer movies that came out in like the mid 2000s that I really connected with when I was in high school because I was the age of the protagonist.
Did you see this movie?
No, okay. I haven't seen it yet. It is in
is
my
there like
queue.
A movie, what's like an example of that sort of movie?
Like of? One that I thought of that's kind of obscure is Wild Tigers I Have Known.
I haven't seen that one.
And god damn it, I can't think of the other one that pops to mind usually when I think of this movie, but I'm just, I don't know, I felt like, it looks like it might be kind of sleepy, kind of talky. I don't know. I mean, part of it is like, what is it? Mm-hmm. Right? So I should just see it out of that curiosity alone.
Yeah.
And I will eventually, probably over the holiday break when I have a little more time to catch up on stuff.
Yeah, come over, we'll watch it on the big TV.
And then follow it up with
I'm
Avatar.
I'm actually going to make him just watch Avatar on the big TV.
I would absolutely.
Like, let's watch I Saw the TV Glow, but just I need you to see the first couple of moments of Avatar the Way of Water.
Yes. Oh, God.
The first couple of hours.
That's
of
how
Avatar,
I got
the
it with
Way
Prometheus.
Water.
And it wasn't even intentional, but wow. It's a good play. I was like, he was over at my apartment for some reason back in the day, and I was like, I want to just show you.
For some reason.
I was like, I want to just prove my point. I want you to see this. Because
I was complaining about the editing, I think, was my main bone.
I was like, just we're going to watch this like with the sound real low. I want you to just look at the cinematography for the first 5 minutes, and that's like an hour later. And we're like,
I mean, at a certain point, I knew what was happening. I let it happen, right? But it is a funny story.
Yeah.
A very funny
story.
Yeah,
yes, yes, yes. Have either of you seen We're All Going to the World's Fair?
No, not
no.
yet.
Really?
Which is the
on
same
the list.
Director, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did see that.
Yeah.
Not to pull rank.
Your review is not encouraging.
Oh, it's fine.
Oh, okay.
It's fine.
What I remember from your review, I was like, this does not sound interesting. I didn't know a damn thing about it.
Oh. It sounded
what you told us.
Like Skinamarink-esque before Skinamarink.
No, not at all.
No?
It drew that comparison from people, and I don't really understand why, except for both of them are kind of formless, semi-experimental movies, but I don't think it's like Skinamarink at all. It was fine. I mean, it didn't blow my mind. I haven't seen I Saw the TV Glow, so it might be the strongest indictment you could make of it. But
I would do a movie night for that with you guys or literally anyone, and I'm so glad I saw it in the theater. And frankly, Chris, you know, you and I we have differences as far as like our I could watch a movie on whatever fucking screen, and you're like, I have to see it on a screen that's this.
Mm-hmm.
As far as home theater, you're like, I
this
have to
big.
See it on this. How big is the screen that we're looking
That's
at right
83
now?
83
inches. 83
yeah.
inch yeah. television
Which
in this man's
small
house.
Now. They're
His address is.
Yes. You're not going to get that through the door. Bring your fucking.
How did you get that down
here? Your whole family. If you're robbing me, your whole family better be robbers because that's what it's going to take to get that out of here. That thing, I'm selling that with the house.
But it's just gorgeous imagery. It deserves to be seen on the biggest screen possible, truly, and with a killer sound system. Because there's amazing needle drops that just blow your
ears
out. Oh, there's
like new
the
weather
theater.
Station music in that. Like
yeah.
awesome bands. Hmm.
Soundtrack's yeah. amazing. Hmm. Amazing.
Well,
Phoebe
right.
Bridgers makes a cameo. It's great.
That'll be our post-Amon hangout.
Yeah.
We'll watch I Saw the TV Glow.
You know what? I'm down. I really want to see it. I've started it a couple of times, and I've gotten 5 minutes in, and I'm like, I am too sleepy for what this is offering me. I need to be in a good frame of mind.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not... it's sleepy. It is sleepy. Yeah. All right. Anyways, enough about that. Best horror discovery of 2024. What did you all watch or read or experience in 2024 that was not for this show and wasn't a new release? I think Chris hasn't gone first yet, if I remember correctly. So I think I'm going to throw it to him. But he looks confused. I don't know if he has a pick.
I knew what I was going to say for this, but I forgot it, so I got to try to refresh my memory. Oh, yeah, I got it. All right, so you'll have to add that out. Or not.
it's the last episode. Fuck
yeah,
it.
Fuck it. We're doing it live.
Warts and all, babe.
We're doing it live. You get to know the real us on the last episode.
We're live right now.
Good. We did do a live app once. Remember that?
Couple,
that was a blast.
I think. Yeah.
I docked a high school friend, and I hope he never finds that video because it's still on YouTube or Facebook or something.
What?
I didn't dock.
That was fun. When we did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre episode live on Twitter Space or whatever the fuck. We also did one on Instagram, I think.
Yeah, and we did a video game, too.
Oh, yeah.
What was that? Not The Wind.
don't knock twice.
I was mad.
Yeah.
I was
mad. Yeah, Chris is legit mad.
And there was no sound.
I was set up. Yeah. I was set up to do it and do it right, and you guys just did it without me. But that's
fine. Oh yeah, because I think you and Kyle were just playing it, and I was like holding up my phone, just like videoing the TV screen.
And it's so like dark and blurry, and nobody has any idea what's happening.
It's an Instagram
shop
live.
Talk. That's a drama moment in the
this
podcast.
This episode is for shop talk. This is for the real, really? The real homie.
Yeah. I'm just letting it bleed right now.
For the real reels. The live streaming experiments we did were very fun, but like I think again that illustrates sort of like a certain dog that I for one used to have in me, and now, you know,
what breed of dog was that?
It was Rottweiler, man.
I've never heard anybody wasn't John Dog,
but that accent on that part of Rottweiler.
So yeah. Anyway, yeah.
Favorite horror discovery of 2024.
Favorite horror discovery of 2024. All right. I'm gonna go ahead and say, don't. I'm talking. I'm speaking. I'm speaking.
I'm off mic.
I'm gonna say Robert the Doll. I watched that documentary.
Oh yeah, that's good.
I watched that documentary on Robert the Doll, which I'd never heard of before. I heard the horrible testimony of the Robert the Doll victims that were, as said, the lower third on the screen. And yeah, it's just a piece of folklore / real life phenomenon that I was not aware of, and I think about a lot. Robert the Doll, don't disrespect Robert the Doll. In a lot of ways, I'm like Robert the Doll.
Oh,
if you disrespect me, something bad comes to you.
Okay. Yeah,
I'm not dressed as well though. Anyway,
that oh,
Steven.
My discovery, so I held this back from our last episode when we were doing our catch-up, because it's like one of the most interesting things that's happened to me in the past year, and it came very late. I got an invitation to a cast and crew screening of a Michigan-made horror movie called Squatch at the Michigan Theater, and my discovery is the filmmaker Tom Chaney, local guy who has made multiple movies. No, I'm sorry. I don't want to lie because I don't want to look this up right now either. He's made at least one film from the 90s called Frostbiter that has been released by Vinegar Syndrome within the last year. And this was just such a crazy experience, and it really kind of like bolstered my love for regional horror, and I want to become friends with him and the producers of this film that I met at this premiere. The movie, I can't say whether or not it was good or bad, because there's an embargo, and I'm going to respect it. I'm allowed to say I saw Squatch at the Michigan Theater, and I had a great time. But it was just so cool to see something that was made by a guy who, like, in the early to mid-90s, you know, who lives locally. He runs a very well-regarded machine shop that services Tesla and other motor companies. That he got like back into his passion and like contacted his producer friends and like made a thing. And
where did you get the producer friends?
What?
Where did you get the producer friends?
I don't know. I've got to talk to him more, I guess.
Yeah, you should. You didn't make friends.
They're clients. They all drive Teslas.
Yeah, that's savvy.
No, I mean, there were like, and this felt like a legitimate movie premiere too. It was crazy. Something like 1,100 people showed up for it, and again, it was cast and crew, and family and friends only. But he got the word out. I still have the custom ticket stub in my apartment, and it was just kind of amazing to see this outpouring of support. People were here from like all over the country who've known this guy for years to show up and cheer this thing on and laugh along with it, and you know, the greatest joy was like, again, I can't review it, but it was pretty campy, and it was really fun to hear throughout the whole movie the cast and crew and extras who like work at his machine shop, which is how I got into it, because I know someone who does, to hear them react to seeing this on the screen. They're in a movie now. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a really lovely experience. I went with a great friend who like was the perfect person to like laugh along to it with. It was a blast. So Tom Chaney, Michigan made local filmmaker, and I'm going to check out his movie Frostbiter, which Vinegar Syndrome released this past year, and which I had heard of before this whole thing, and I didn't even know he was from Michigan. So I'm excited to check out his other work, and I'm excited to see what he does with the release for this film. I'm wishing him the greatest success in 2025.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
So let me segue to Amon Memory. This is kind of taking on the format of great video game Hitman Contracts, in which Agent 47 is shot and he stumbles into a hotel room and he's like very gravely wounded and he's sort of having feverish flashbacks. Like the drip of the sink in the bathroom reminds him of the rain on his window. When he
oh, so it's like Slumdog Millionaire.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll go with you there. So that's kind of the format here. You tell a modern story and it recalls Amon history.
Yeah.
This is how memory works. I'm not entirely shocked.
Yeah. it's reminding me of, one of the all time highs of our show, which most of our listeners, it doesn't mean anything to, but we tabled at the Motor City Nightmares convention.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In Novi, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And hung out and promoted the show and had some sort of game that I designed. I forget what the conceit of it was. It was like matching the title with the premise. Yes. Or something.
Yeah, it was like the Netflix one sentence plot summary, I think, of the movie.
Something like that.
Yeah, to match up the little tiles.
But anyway, we were tabling right next to a group of people who make films.
Oh, yes.
In Michigan, not far from where we live, with a director named John Vincent.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Who has made John Vincent's Deadeye, John Vincent's Witch Hunter, John Vincent's The Sixth Extinction, my favorite, John Vincent's Five Must Die, but the F in five is the number five.
Five. Yeah. Hell yeah.
And then they've been doing a zombie themed web series lately. But we made friends with the people involved in that production group. And they were showing the movies and I was like, this guy's a fucking badass.
Yeah.
John Vincent. Local talent.
Yeah, yeah, and our friend who we met at that table,
Tim,
what a, I miss him. It's been about a year since I've talked to him, and
for whatever reason, I assumed that like we were gonna like hang out with him all the time after that convention because he lives in the same town as us. But haven't seen him in person since then, sadly. But great guy.
Yeah, Patrick, your favorite horror discovery?
Yes. So I'm gonna pick two. Top one is
you're not allowed to do that.
I've done it before. I'll do it again. My top one is PTSD Radio, the manga series, which, and actually I'm going to throw a quick shout out here to listener Erica.
Yes.
Because I just got to distribute your incredibly thoughtful care package that you sent to us, to Chris and Steven, who I hadn't seen in person as a group for a little bit, but we got to split up the lovely books and cat treats and other
that was amazing,
wonderful gifts that you sent to us. So that was really kind.
Listen,
of you.
We might be leaving the show, but it's not too late to accept your mail and divvy up your gifts.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, if you have any care packages to send them before, I'm going to say February 1st. That's the cutoff when I get all the care packages. Look at me, I take the care packages now.
Insert George W. Bush just send cash meme.
Oh, I don't even know
you
that.
You don't know
meme.
That?
No.
Oh, there's a
no. There was
there's a clip from like one of the hurricanes or something.
Oh, okay.
And he's like, people want to know how they can help. Send blankets. Send this. Just send your cash.
Well, there was a lot of awesome shit in that box.
There was,
including
yes.
a bunch of Ito, and you know, I've been thinking of rereading Uzumaki, and now I have my own copy,
which is how actually cool a good reminder to me to watch that. Max series, finally, the Uzumaki series, because I started
Have you seen the live action movie?
Yeah.
Is it how is it?
It's not great, but there are some incredible Gonzo moments in it, and I would highly recommend it, even though it's not like a masterpiece adaptation. For I almost want to say it comes as close as a live action adaptation could come to like representing Ito's insane visuals.
Did you also know that he directed a movie?
Mm-mm.
Okay, we'll talk offline about that. We don't need to spoil the episode, but yeah, he Ito actually made an adaptation of one of his works, like directed it himself.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, here's what it would look like if his vision was live action. Oh. I'm fucking fascinated.
I'll look that up.
But that, yeah, that package was insane. There's some cat treats in there I need to take home, too.
Yeah, and I bring up this incredibly generous gift from listener Erica, who also created the handmade fucking stamp of the Amon logo.
Praise Erica.
Incredible work. But she sent us a copy of PTSD Radio Volume 1, which I'm going to highly encourage either Chris or Steven to take home with
them. I'm taking it home.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Because I have all three volumes now, also at Erica's recommendation. Amazing manga. Like, and I shouted it out a couple of episodes ago, but again, horror discovery of the year for me. It's these collections of very, very short, usually I would say average 4 or 5 page horror stories. Each of them has just a sick, nightmarish little gut punch of a punchline to it. And you think it's just short stories, little vignettes, and it turns out there's this very weird thread running through all of them, loose plot kind of hanging them all together. It's really unlike anything I've ever read or seen before. So I really enjoyed PTSD Radio. The other one that I'm going to throw out, and you'll appreciate this, Chris, and I thought of it only because you referenced it a moment ago.
Oh.
I'm going to give Prometheus a shout out for my horror discovery of this year, because you know what? I've been a Prometheus hater for a long time. I saw that motherfucker in the theater. I saw that motherfucker in the theater opening weekend. Didn't like it. I've been a hater for the longest time. I rewatched it because of Alien Romulus, and I was like, and I don't say this often, I said, you know what? Chris was right.
I'm always right. That's
no, don't go. Don't trump it up
now,
over there.
10 years from now, you're gonna listen to all fucking 179 episodes of Amon, of which I've been on fucking like 176 of them, and you're gonna say, you know what, Chris's take was right. All these that I've disagreed on.
No, I'm never gonna come around to the Vatican tapes. I'm never gonna come around to Avatar: The Way of Water, but Prometheus, you know what? I got to give it a lot of credit, especially as a fucking alien prequel, which it was marketed as, for not just doing the, here's a fucking xenomorph. I mean, it shows a xenomorph for 2 seconds.
Worst part of the movie.
But it is. That could have been excised entirely and reads completely like studio interference. Because otherwise, it's not really concerned with giving you all the constant alien fan service and shout outs that we hated Romulus for. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Big props to Prometheus for doing something different. Ridley Scott, frankly, for making an interesting film, which he hasn't made a ton of in his later career.
He's been accused recently by a cinematographer of being lazy on his latest film.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. That might have been kind of like the last big swing
sleepy.
From him.
That shocked me, actually, because I mean, like, the Gladiator 2 press tour is barely over. Like, that came out 2 weeks ago or something, and the cinematographer is just out there savaging him. Mm-hmm. Like, sort of
shocking.
There's
a difference between lazy and sleepy.
It's a fine line.
But anyways, I rediscovered Prometheus this year.
That's
so.
A great discovery. I'm glad you rediscovered Prometheus.
Thank you.
Science fiction, not horror, but okay.
It's a great film.
It's definitely horror.
What? Just fucking with you.
And I mean, here, like, I like the universe of Alien more than I like the Alien. And Prometheus is a good movie for that. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, I like the technology, I like the aesthetic.
And there's interesting characters in
it.
You know, I mean, Shaw distinguishes herself from Ripley in a way that couldn't tell you the protagonist of Alien Romulus does.
Rain.
Was that Rain? Saoirse Rain. Ronan? Who was the lead in that?
Noomi.
Noomi Rapace. Yeah, who knows how you pronounce
that. Saoirse Ronan was probably like 7 years old when that movie came out.
I knew it was a name that we would argue over the pronunciation of. That's
obviously it introduces us to David, which
David,
you
so
know,
good.
Which, so good. You know, we can leave. But
all right, so that covers our favorite horror discoveries of 2024. And now it's time for the
coveted?
Oh, coveted. Well, I was gonna say I think the second most important moment of this show, because we still have a reflection on our beautiful journey. To go through. We have a little walk down memory lane. But first, we have to hand out... Chris is busting out the Kleenex. First, we have to hand out the coveted, the sought-after
Spirit of Jay Award. And again, this is the award for the character in a movie we watched for the podcast this year who most represents the spirit of the character of Jay, which means completely different things to all of us, as we've discussed.
Yeah, and as the years go on, too.
On these episodes, mm-hmm. It's evolving. Mm-hmm. Jay evolves. Mm-hmm. Jay has grown with
us. Part of what makes him Jay.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. So it's time to say who most represent the spirit of Jay this year. Steven, would you like to go first?
Yeah, the spirit of Jay, for me this year, begins with a J, and it's John Voight in Anaconda.
I was hoping if there's anyone we can count on to have an unorthodox choice for the spirit of Jay, it's you.
Hey, Patrick had Mr. Banku.
You're right. Oh, we can't talk about that episode tonight, but I retconned that in my brain. Because
you guys lost your minds for like at least a full minute after I
in my mind
it's one of the funniest things I've ever experienced
in my memory. Steven picked Mr. Banku.
No, it but was... I've doubled down on the Mr. Banku energy, and I was gonna pick Cole from The Babysitter, and I decided I need to stop picking Moppets to be Jay. We need a real man.
Yeah,
dude.
And that man is John Voight in Anaconda. Just the accent, everything, the evil that he exudes, he just like totally elevates that movie for me.
I want to throw in one more note about Banku. The funniest thing about listening back to that for me is I didn't think it was funny. I thought it was like a totally normal Spirit of Jay pick, and you guys would be like, oh yeah. And I was like completely bewildered, but also delighted by how you guys just lost your ever loving shit when I made that pick.
That's why it landed the way it did. I cried.
Yeah.
And it's because I like knew that you were just being 100% genuine. It was so the sincere. Most insane pick possible.
And it was funny too, because as you guys laughed, I didn't feel mocked. I just like developed an understanding that I didn't have up till that point of like, oh, I am sincere, but also, wow, yeah, this is an insane pick. Like, what is wrong with me?
Yeah, great pick, though. I mean, thank legendary. You. But yeah, I mean, what more can I say about John Voight and Anaconda? I mean, that movie's been around for, what, like 25 years, something like that. Everybody knows how insane that performance is. But it was a real highlight for me this year, like in a movie that really needed some Jay energy, I think, to stay afloat.
I mean, it prompted me to go, like, comb YouTube to find one of his insane pro-Trump rants.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, I would have voted for Trump if he had endorsed him in character. but I'm also nominating John Voight in Anaconda for the Spirit of Jay. But I'm not happy about it. It's just, you know, this has been sort
Slim
of a,
pickings.
This has been a weak year for that sort of like supporting character or even a main character with that energy. The big difference between John Voight's character in Anaconda and the classic Jay is at a noble heart. He is a noble man.
Yes, I did consider this. But
and John Voight's a scoundrel in that film.
For me, it was more about just the added value of that character being in the film.
Oh, I agree. I'm picking him, too. You don't got to explain it.
I love the...
For our listeners.
I love the annual and now final discussion between the three of us about like what Jay actually means, like what the spirit of Jay actually represents.
Nobility.
Yeah.
And eccentricity, which means there's only one other acceptable candidate in this year's films.
Oh, who's
and did Patrick
your,
pick that
did
person?
Patrick pick yeah. that person.
So John Voight was also on my short list. He's not my pick, but he was up there. I'm gonna go with Pearl. I don't think it's a super like controversial choice, but you know, Pearl from X. In the sense of so Jay has always meant to me like a kind of off the rails character that you want to see more of. Like Jay, I was like, why are there not like 17 movies about Jay? And
like Father Amort.
Like Father
Which there
Amort.
Will be.
That's who I think is the
Oh, that's a good pick.
Choice.
But I was going to, but I think
one to one.
I think I already picked, or one of us already picked the real Father Amort in a previous year end episode. Yeah. So I decided to put that to the side.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Pearl, now we have, well, just, I guess, two, ostensibly sort of three movies about her. And actually, at this point, I'm kind of like, okay, I'm probably good on Pearl. But
God bless. God bless. What an incredible creation that Ty and Mia came up with.
What a beautiful year of Amon.
A beautiful year of Amon. All right, folks. Well, that wraps up our final Amon Awards as the Holy Trinity, as Father Amort might say, Chris, Patrick, and Stephen.
I don't want to blaspheme, but yeah, sure.
And before we wrap up this episode and before Chris and Stephen, you know, head off into the night on their little ships or whatever you guys are going to ride out of here.
Run off to write Pizza Face Killer.
Yeah, before you run off to write Pizza Face Killer. What are you going to do after this, Stephen?
I'm going to go to sleep.
And Stephen goes to sleep. We're going to do a little retrospective. We're going to look back a little bit on these 7 years that we spent doing this shit together. But, you know, we love a spoiler room break on this show, and so we're going to take one real quick, and then we'll be back with all the spoilers for the past 7 years that you probably have already heard. So stay tuned. All right, we are back in the spoiler room for the year-end episode, and we're reflecting on the past 7 years of Amon together. What do you guys have to fucking say for yourselves about the past 7 years? You know, what were the highlights? What were the lowlights? What do you think? What are you feeling?
I have a couple things to say. First thing I have to say is,
how many things do you have to say about this? There's an old.
You're
meme.
The one who always has two things to say.
Not anymore. That
have
meme has
one
gone
thing
away.
To say that hits hard.
Oh,
wow!
But no, format wise, you know, this reminds me. I was one of the lucky people who was at the final Red Wings game played at Joe Louis Arena in Detroit before they moved to Little Caesars Arena, and I was upset because it was the end of an era, but like they played the game and then they were like, fans, please stay in your seats for a retrospective. And then we like sat in our fucking chairs for like 30 minutes. And then they like brought these people out on stage and they had all these like athletes from years past come out and skate around. And they did this like very poorly planned retrospective interview with the TV broadcasters and various athletes. And it was, I was like, you know what? I'm here for the last game. I kind of just want the last game to be like every other game you've been to. The Red Wings win, they play the horn, they skate off the ice, y'all get up, you go walk through the concourse, crowded. I feel like there's like a comfort and a familiarity to doing the last thing the same way you've always done it. And it just happens to be the last one. We're fucking that all up. We're going to have a big big retrospective here. But
are we?
But we're also
I have an early morning tomorrow, so let's not belabor it too much.
But we're also not going to bring out anybody from the past. There's no special guests coming.
Not as far as I know.
What else do you have to say, though,
yeah,
Chris?
So what do I have to say?
Now that you're done talking
side.
About hockey.
Well, all right. So, I mean, we sort of talked a little bit about our internal journey on the last episode. But, you know, this has been a hell of an experience for me. 7 years. I mean, most podcasts don't last 7 years. Only the ones that you've heard of.
That's an interesting point. I wonder what the average age of a podcast is, because I'm sure you're right.
Probably like 5 episodes, and people are like, yeah. "I can't keep this up."
Yeah,
and you know, something about us has led to us keeping it up for this long. And yeah, there's been some.
it was the hymns sponsorship.
Jesus Christ.
That hymns money, we couldn't turn it down.
And then there's been some bumps along the way. You know, like I said, we used to do this every week.
That's fucking psychotic.
And then we went to every 2 weeks, and then you know
that's
we,
still
you
psychotic
know, until recently. You know,
well, what's crazy is like in the early weekly days, we would do 2 episodes back to back. Usually record 2 episodes back to back, usually on a Friday or Saturday night. Like that would be our.
That was a secret, though. We didn't.
I know, but yeah,
we're
it's well, shop talk. We're pulling back the curtain now, but that's interesting to think about. That would be like a fixture, a firmament of our weekend was getting together, getting blasted. We would get wasted and do 2 episodes back to back, and then go out afterwards.
Yeah, and you knew that a quarter of your weekend days were committed to Amon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because every 2 weeks on a Friday or Saturday, you were recording him on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you know what? Didn't wear me down. Had a great time.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you start the show and you don't think anyone's going to listen to it when you start the show, but it's exciting. And for me in the early days, it was a level of baseline creative output that sort of like kept the pilot flame lit for me and made me feel like productive and more capable of doing the creative stuff I want to do otherwise.
You're doing something, right? It's better than nothing. And it was kind of an anchor for me in that way too, I have to say.
It absolutely was for me too. I hit a weird period of creative stagnation, I think, in my mid 20s to late 30s probably, and honestly I've only really relit that flame recently by making fucking comics, which has felt so good. And I felt so bad about myself for not like doing quote unquote enough creative stuff for a while, and this was definitely something where it was like, okay, I can do this and establish, as you said, Chris, that baseline creativity. I am making a thing. It doesn't maybe feel quite the same as making a movie or a song or comics or something, but I'm still creating a thing and putting it out there into the world.
Yeah.
And for people to respond to it as they have, that's what keeps you going. Mm-hmm. Honestly, if it weren't for our fans,
yep,
and especially our most dedicated fans, who have gone out of their way to send us care packages and letters and engage with us online in a multitude of ways. And that's the hardest part about hanging it up for me, because I know that there's people out there, just like I listen to my favorite shows on a schedule, you know, they are working their shitty jobs, they're doing their everyday life, and they sort of count on us. So
I mean, we've heard from people who said that we got them through the pandemic, which is it's not insane for that person to say, but it's insane for me to, it feels insane for me to contemplate that this thing that started from you sending me an IM saying we should do a podcast called Every Horror Movie on Netflix, where we watch every horror movie on Netflix, and that ended up being crucial to someone's mental health.
Yes.
During the pandemic.
And it was for mine too. I mean, I'll be vulnerable in a way that I don't know that I've been on the show before, but when I first heard about the concept of this that Chris had come up with, I had moved out of state to stay with someone in a relationship that I thought was going to be like the be all end all, and found that I really needed my connections back at home more than anything else. Realized that wasn't going to work out, and insisted that if this thing were to happen, I needed to be there for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you know, thankfully you guys were patient enough with me for it to work out that way. And it was an incredible joy to be able to have not only the companionship instantly when I moved back home, but also to be able to do something that I had never done before. And to traffic in a genre that is near and dear to my heart, throughout the process. It was a really beautiful thing. I think, I don't know how you guys plan on approaching this, kind of, nostalgic love fest, but I would like to run down my three favorite Amon moments. How does that sound?
That sounds great. Let me interrupt you though, because Steven, we were friends, but we weren't close.
No.
But when we started this show, and I was actually apprehensive about bringing you into the group, because like I had this notion that you had like an elevated film appreciation thing.
And you found out I'm just an idiot like everyone else. So
and then but I was like, no, that that makes sense for the sort of dynamic of the show too.
Sure.
To have someone who's a little more in the you know, lesser known horror space, or the sort of film, elevated film
space. Elevated horror,
because like
a term we love
at that point
here.
I was just in my like, yeah, my the best movie ever made is Shooter, you know, that sort of space, and that's how much I've grown in 7 years to now I'm more pretentious than Steven.
Yeah,
it's true.
Yeah,
it is generally by and large true.
But no, it's been it's been we're all much closer than we would have been otherwise for this. But
no, it's been a beautiful journey.
More to say, more to ramble about everything. But yeah, Stephen, let's what are some Amon moments that stick out in your mind here?
Wait, and also like I feel like we should pick out like some. I love the idea of three highlights, but I feel like we should also pick out some moments where I was like. Fuck.
Well, I was just gonna say highlights and lowlights.
Yeah, highlights and lowlights.
Yeah, I mean highlights of the journey for me. I mean, one, our friendship with Neville Archambault.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
From 13 Cameras. You can easily search, I think, and listen back to our episodes on those films in our interview with him.
You should, if you are listening to us for any reason and you haven't heard our interview with Neville, I think you owe it to yourself to listen to that and watch 13 or 14 Cameras.
But the sad thing is that he continued to be a recurring guest, and that's harder to search.
Yeah, no, he became an amazing kind of friend to us and such a sad loss. In fact, the Block Island Sound, I think the last film he appeared in is if it's not out on Blu-ray now, it's coming out very soon from a Michigan company, Synapse Films, who we have interacted with at Motor City Nightmares, and I'm curious to see what the special features are on that, if there's an interview with him or anything, because he's pretty integral to that film, and I thought it was really cool that thing that I only would have known about because of Amon is now becoming kind of a cult classic.
Mm-hmm. And Neville, like, I don't want to speak for Neville, of course he's passed away since we spoke to him, but what struck me is how much Neville seemed to get out of that experience of coming on our show, because he opened up and talked about personal experiences and struggles he'd had in his life that he hadn't talked to anybody about before, and sort of how that informed his art. And yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, I think that's probably in all our top three Amon moments, talking to him and building that relationship.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we talk about things that surprised us on this journey, whether it's people listening and interacting with it, which we've touched on already, but I mean certainly of all things, that movie, which we all hated, but somehow he found us because of our bad review of his movie, and it remains a mystery that we'll never have resolved because he's passed on, whether he really listened to that episode and found out that we didn't like his movie, but we did like his performance. We all were struck by his performance.
Absolutely.
And somehow formed this relationship with this guy who would just like text me out of the blue on a semi-regular basis to like see what was up or tell me he had a movie coming out or whatever, and would just participate in the weirdest dumb bits for this show too. You know, like we were doing, I forget what the bit was one year, it was like, you know, something scary that happened to you this year, and I was like, Neville, you know, like just texting him, We're doing this thing. I know you don't watch a lot of horror, and a lot of people are talking about a horror movie that scared them this year, but was there like just something that happened in your life that scared you this year? And he sent a
creamy
video, if I remember correctly, of this chilling story about his goat named Creamy disappearing.
And he died suddenly right after that.
And I'll always be haunted by that.
Yeah. I mean, UFOs may have been involved.
Yeah. But I mean, what an incredible person, honestly, like just a sweet, sweet man that I am still sort of stunned we all got to know on a personal level because of doing this little project.
I got a FaceTime call, I think, from Neville in the middle of the night. It had to have been an accident. I didn't answer. I think I texted him or something. But like, I think we had used maybe my phone for FaceTime when we talked to him or something. So he had me in his system, and then I'm like, it's like 2 a.m. and it's Neville Travis.
That's awesome.
Do you guys also remember like how just like jury-rigged the setup was when we interviewed him?
Oh, yeah.
In my memory, someone's phone was like basically duct taped to like a mic stand so that we could all see him.
And we were all
something as janky as
how I do everything, man. I mean, we're janky.
Look at you
should
see what we're doing right now.
that was a wild arrangement.
I have a normal mic on a mic stand right now. Patrick has a normal mic on a mic stand right now. Steven has a boom pole with a shotgun mic pointed at him, supported by a mic stand that doesn't have a mic on it.
And there's tape attaching the two of them. Yeah. So we really haven't upgraded the setup, the tech has only gone downhill in 7 years, all things considered.
Well, what we else sound on better. Your... And I wanna as a point of pride, I think our show has always been technically above its weight over the 7 years.
Solely thanks to you.
No.
And I'm sure
you said it, not me.
And I'm sure it will only go down downhill steeply from here. Steven, what other highlights are on your
mind?
And
I feel like I'm going to cover highlights that you guys want to bring up too, but that's great because we'll just get to talk about
highlights.
It. Another big one for me was watching the car with our old friend Bill.
Wow.
Our dear departed friend Bill. And then
Who guessed it on an episode
about the car. No, was it the car? What was he on?
I don't remember.
He brought that film to us. But I can't remember what episode he was on. But anyway, we later reviewed the car to Road to Revenge and then wound up getting an email from the director of the car to Road to Revenge. And he admitted he was drunk and, you know, that's no crime on this show. And wanted to have a conversation. And we had a beautiful episode with him talking about that film and the inner workings of the sort of studio side of quote-unquote independent filmmaking, and he was such a delight. I think about him often and keep meaning to reach out and start a conversation, see what he's working on these days. And I did a whole deep dive into his filmography because he had a documentary that he made about himself and his family life and his parents, and then also he wound up making a fictionalized version of that. It was a really cool way to connect with, you know, sometimes you see these movies that we have to watch for a show like this and they for whatever reason fucking suck, and it's not always the filmmaker's fault. And there was I learned so much about studio intervention in that conversation, and I think about it often.
And, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I have gone on this diatribe before, but I'll do it again because, again, a pivotal moment for us here. But we all went hard on that movie. Again, kind of like 13 Cameras. And I think I might have gone hardest of anyone on that show.
This movie fucking sucks.
You know, it's a mess. And then to have the director reach out and go, hey, essentially, like, your review bothered me.
Yeah.
And to not send us a screed of you guys suck or whatever, but just like, I'd like to talk about it, was such a wonderful opportunity. And God bless him for giving us that, because it was, for me, an incredible lesson in empathy, frankly, and just thinking more about what every creative on any of these movies goes through. It's something I do think about to begin with, but I think about it so much more after talking to him and hearing about his love for the original car, his vision for this weird sequel that he got sort of roped into making, and the way his career sort of had started to fall apart prior to that and then fell apart even more after that. Like, I feel sad just thinking about that, you know? And he obviously felt sad about it. And I just appreciated that he was as open as he was with us, because clearly he was at a point where he was like, at some point I might have risked something by sharing this story, but shit has gone south enough that I feel like I have nothing to risk anymore, which is so sad for him. Yeah. Universal fucked him. But I'm really grateful that he took the chance to reach out to us and that we got to hear his side of the story. It's great.
And that's, I mean, I think that kind of also speaks to some of my personal loss of enthusiasm for keeping the show going on my end as much as I have in the past, because from the beginning, we we were very clear we didn't want to do a bad movie podcast. We didn't want to just review bad movies and dunk on them. And we've always tried to find the silver linings in these movies and try to give everybody a fair shake.
Yeah.
But at some point, for me, it's just become exhausting to be the critic who's not in the arena and is just throwing tomatoes most of the time. And at this point, after doing 170, 180 episodes, which is a lot of fucking time.
Which is a lot more movies than that, too, we should say, because some of our episodes have 10 movies in them. Right.
Like, I'm out of criticisms, basically. I mean, I feel like everybody who's followed us this far knows what each of us likes or knows what I like. And I got to a point where I just did not like hearing myself on the mic anymore saying, I like the color grade. I thought the performances were good, you know? And so I don't know. It's just time for me to step back. But yeah, I definitely may return.
I hear you. And it's not like I'm going to, I mean, you know, I've been in a creative rut for many years now. It's not like I'm going to be like, okay, well, we're not doing Amon for now or for a while or forever or whatever, and I'm going to go out and make a movie. That's not happening. But I do feel like I feel less qualified and less, like, I feel less satisfaction from being on this end of the conversation for right now. I mm-hmm. feel like it's an impediment to me, like, developing my own ideas and learning to be kinder to myself and to further foster, you know, whatever the next venture might be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. And I feel like I've actually made some progress towards my grand creative goals in my life. And as I lean closer to that, I sort of feel like leaning away from this model that I've done for 7 years. Not that I'm not proud of our body of work. It's just, you know, people grow, people change.
So it's an interesting compare and contrast, because I came into this, I think I was already past kind of the phase of my career where I was professionally reviewing movies when we came into this. I was fully moved on from that. And that in particular, writing reviews for newspapers or magazines or whatever, isn't something I yearn to go back to. If somebody offered me a job doing it, I'd do it, obviously. But it's not something I miss. I do still love horror, and I love talking about horror with people, which is, to me, what this fundamentally is and why I want to keep it going. And I will keep it going into, 2025 and beyond. I understand the burnout there, because I got burnt out on criticism as well. But for me, it's just still talking horror with people and talking movies in general with people is still fun to me, where like written criticism isn't, in the same way that I think this has burnt you guys out.
And I am still going to keep doing my Letterboxd. So if you want to follow me at Amon Chris, maybe I'll get a cease and desist on that handle. But Amon Chris, I'm on Letterboxd, and I do enjoy, because I'm not, I wish I were a better writer than I am. And so this is my letterbox is sort of a way for me to practice, exercise that muscle. And I kind of enjoy it in some ways more than sitting here and having to fill an hour.
I often feel like I have no idea what the fuck I'm talking about when I'm doing this. So there's a little bit of that too. It's like, I'm just not used to sort of putting myself out in public so much. But yeah, that is something I'll miss about this, is just be like having a reason to talk about horror on a regular basis. I mean, I have friends that are very keyed into the genre and we do discuss these things, but it's not the same.
And having a reason to watch this stuff. I had a coworker that I don't know incredibly well, but we have a good rapport. He came by my office and he knew that, cause I had talked to him about The Substance for some reason. And then he said, have you seen this movie called Climax? And I was like,
have I ever.
And that's a movie that I would absolutely not have watched if not for this show. And I mean, that's the main thing that I'm gonna miss, having a reason to watch stuff that otherwise, let's be honest, I'm just not gonna get to, you know.
I had one of those experiences at work, like, not that long ago. Somebody was like, because like I'm very Like, if you visit my office, you'll see, like, it's very clear that I'm a horror person, in addition to working in academia and research. And somebody was like, oh, you like horror movies. Have you seen Veronica? And I'm like,
as a matter of fact.
As a matter of fact, I have. Yes.
When you mentioned Climax, that kind of reminds me of one of my highlights of this experience, which is that we've had the opportunity to be sort of politically active through this show. And I got to give you, Chris, credit for that, because particularly with one of these examples, like, it was you who drove for this, and me who was like, that seems like a little much at first.
Yeah.
And in retrospect, thank you for pushing for it. But, you know, the writers and actors strike, what was that, last year?
Yeah, last year.
Yeah.
Last summer, fall.
You know, we did our little thing. We boycotted Netflix for a bit and did A24 horror for, you know, the duration of the strike. Did we do a fundraiser? Yeah, we did a fundraiser.
Yeah, we did an auction. There. And we also did one in 2020.
Yeah, that was the other example I was going to bring up.
The Movement for Black Lives.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was like one of the honors of my life, was being in a position where, like, yeah, we can raise $200.
Yeah, which, or 250, you know,
it was,
whatever.
I think more than, because I think auction was like 150 or something, and one of our friends matched it.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. Because we all chipped in to match whatever the winning bid was. It doesn't matter what the numbers were. But I'm glad that we were able to use this show for some small degree of political activism. And again, going back to our listeners and our fan community, like, love that y'all are out there and you're active and you're medium woke enough to get engaged with that and help us raise some money for, at the time, you know, Black Lives Matter movement, or to support actors and writers who were on strike at the time. I'm proud of that, and I hope to keep that going as I kind of move into this new era.
Yeah.
I think you had a third highlight on your mind, right, Steven?
You know, I did, and it's been on my mind that I should remember what that is. I think the third was probably just a movie, something that I discovered through the show that will continue to linger with me, and I'm curious to hear what y'all have to say on the same topic. I think my favorite movie that we've seen through this whole experience, oddly, was very early on in our journey.
Ooh.
And it was A Dark Song.
I knew it.
A movie that I had known about before.
You had not seen it before we did this?
I did watch it shortly before I knew that we were going to have to eventually review it, because it was like so early in the numerical numerical combination alphabet. Because when we started this show, it really was A to Z, and it took a while to get to A.
Yeah.
That's a movie that I still, you know, when people ask me about this podcast, or I bring it up in conversation around like-minded horror folks or whatever, they're like, well, what one movie would you recommend? And I'm like, well, you need to fucking see A Dark Song. It's an absolute masterpiece. I can think of very few that we've seen in this whole journey.
Mm-hmm.
Under the Shadow or His House.
I was going to say, like, what else comes to mind for you guys? Because I think that's a question we've all gotten a lot, is like, okay, so you've watched, quote unquote, every horror movie on Netflix. What do you recommend? And whenever anyone asks me that question, my mind just is a blank slate. I'm just like, I've watched 180 movies, probably 200. As you said, like, there's episodes where we've done
full franchise,
multiple movies, and my mind just goes blank. I'm like, duh. The Dark Song is one that always comes to mind. Eventually, His House for sure.
Ava's Possessions for me.
Oh,
which you guys didn't like as much as me, but that's fine.
No,
wait, is that the
It's sort of like the black comedy.
Is that the Natasha Lyonne one?
No,
it's Anti-Birth.
Yeah.
That's
Anti-Birth.
That's a film.
That's one I won't recommend to anybody, you know, just anybody, I should say. But that one.
It's the one about the young woman who's in a 12-step program for people who are possessed.
Yeah.
And, flawless film, certainly not, but it was it was up my alley in terms of sense of humor. And, you know, if I have a regret kind of, going back to what we were talking about with Neville and G.J. Ektenkamp, the director of The Car, Road to Revenge, you know, I wish that this had been more of a show where we had done that more often and talked to filmmakers more and sort of that sort of thing. And in terms of taking the show to the next level, and I know Patrick's got ideas on how to do that, you know, I would like to do that more, talk to filmmakers more, sort of get... provide something of value to the world beyond my opinion about a movie.
Something I got really excited about too. We did try though. I mean, like, I know early on I tried to contact the, or actually successfully contacted the filmmaker behind American Poltergeist.
Oh, yeah.
And that just never materialized. Yeah. He kind of goes to me, even though he seemed pretty enthusiastic.
Can we call him Mike Wazowski just for like one last meme reference, especially since he ghosted you?
Yeah, yeah.
But no idea what his actual name was.
I think it was pretty close to that.
But yeah, like those of our listeners who have been listening to this for a while, like, no, because I always talk about it. Like, there's sometimes a movie came along and I was like, this is why I'm doing the show personally. I want to discover these movies that nobody has heard of that resonate with me in some way.
For me, in a way, I knew going in that it was going to be mostly torture, but that seemed funny. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Funny. It would be funny. Oh, God.
Nobody's going to understand that reference, but that's okay. No, it really seemed like it was like, okay, we're going to have to watch some bad shit, but I do, in my personal life, I love watching bad horror movies. I had to learn to redefine what bad meant to me.
Mm. Yeah.
Because we saw some shit. I mean, American Poltergeist, since I just
mentioned it. Not even the bottom of the barrel.
Not even the bottom of the barrel, but like barely a
American
movie.
Poltergeist 2 was significantly worse, right?
The worst movie, you didn't watch this, The Open House.
Yeah, I didn't.
The Open House with freaking Cole from 13 Reasons Why.
And that wasn't even like super low budget.
No,
right? that was like a Netflix
marquee film.
Because American Poltergeist was like, you could tell somebody just shot that on their fucking...
Some guys with their camera doing their best.
Yeah,
God bless them.
Bunch of kids in college just making a movie.
Well, so we're moving on to the low lights now. I feel like we've just naturally segued, but like The Open House, Chris...
There's nothing more to say about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I mean, no, it was so
bad. I mean, Chris,
so
like, I feel like verbally assaulted me for choosing that movie on the air.
After I watched it, I feel your
pain. I've gotten that a few times. At least a few times.
I'm sorry. I just picked a movie out of the available options. I didn't make it.
But I'm kind of just scrolling over the last 7 years of history here. And like, another good movie that I forgot about, like Backcountry.
Oh,
that was okay.
Yeah, like decent movie that I wouldn't have watched probably.
Yeah,
if not for this show, Boys in the Trees. Boys in the Trees.
Hecitis.
Not a great, like not a great movie, but it had a vibe to it that stuck with me.
It had when I was talking about when we were talking about, I saw the TV Glow.
Mm-hmm.
That was the other movie I was thinking of. I'm like, I wonder if it's got Boys in the Trees energy to it a little bit. Kind of a nostalgic journey through the night.
That makes me want to revisit Boys in the Trees because it's been so long that I don't remember a damn thing.
We might have to do some word association with some of these movies we've watched over the years, but we'll move on for now.
I mean, all right, here's one that I want to pull out that's both a low light and a highlight. The Blue Whale.
Oh my God, of course.
One of the most awful movies,
unwatchable.
Just amateurish, unwatchable, and yet it gave us one of the most shocking moments, if not the most shocking
moment.
Don't
even spoil it.
We've
Don't
ever experienced.
It. If you know, you know.
Good point. Good
if
point.
If you know, you know. You
if
know,
you know you the know. Emoji on the Discord, you know. Otherwise, go watch The Blue Whale, an Egyptian horror film that is less than 90 minutes. So you're not wasting too much time, or just listen to our episode and it will be spoiled for you in spectacular fashion, because there was a moment in that you can't imagine. If you're trying to imagine what's the most shocking and bizarre thing that could happen in a film
in
the year 2020, whatever.
You can spoil it and no one will believe you.
Honestly, yeah. The Joker shows up.
You can say that.
A literal blue whale flops onto somebody and kills them.
Paya Khan.
Pyacon shows up. You know, like, name five insane things and you'll never get there.
You'll never get there.
Except maybe we already spoiled it for you.
But you have to see it, and you have to have the experience of watching the film up until that point.
Yeah. Not and expecting anything.
You will be, even if you are expecting Joker to show up, you're not going to fucking believe us. You're not going to believe us, and you'll be richly rewarded.
Yes. Yes. It's
one of the, like, I mean, in our episode description for that, which I just stumbled upon the other day, it begins with a quote from me, which says that one of the most shocking things I've ever seen in cinema happens in this movie.
Yeah. Yep.
And it lives up to it.
And I mean, that's another example where, like, none of the three of us ever would have watched The Blue Whale not for this.
There's a car parked. I'm going to take a picture one day and post it on the Discord. Follow the show notes, go to our Discord, become a member. It's free. We'll talk to you. Even Steven and I are still going to be on the Discord. there's a car that parks in Depot Town that has a license plate that says Blue Whale.
Whoa!
Well, there's also in the little kind of, what would you call it? Like the cul-de-sac that Trader Joe's is in. There's a Blue Whale Cafe that I see a couple days a week.
Oh, wow.
That kind That's of a conspiracy. Freaks me out every time. Because the Blue Whale is a real thing, right?
I mean,
I think so. I think it's an urban legend.
Okay.
I'm not aware of it.
But I thought it was like a, God, what was it, like a suicide thing?
Yeah, it's like you follow the meme too hard and then you kill yourself.
Die by suicide. Yeah, That's what they say now.
Yeah.
another one that comes to mind for me is fucking Dabe the Possession. Like,
the fatwa that was issued.
Oh my god,
that is insane.
Fatwa. I mean,
okay, like, so
that
first
sounds
hand,
like a crazy thing for Steven to say, but
it's
if
not.
If you saw our social media comments,
would have never dropped into the middle of this insane franchise called Dabe to watch. What was that? The third or fourth installment? Yeah. I think Dabe the Possession.
Dabe 4, the Possession. Yeah.
Yeah, and mostly an unremarkable and unmemorable movie, except for this wild scene of a Turkish exorcist.
Well, that's something where I'm like should I've used the term fatwa, but I mean, it stands. People want us dead.
People this literally told us we should be in jail for religious reasons.
This man was excavating human and animal remains from an outhouse while women screamed and lost their absolute minds, and we lost our minds too because it was horrifying. He pulled like a skinned
so much stuff
cow
out of that
skull
toilet. Yeah.
Out of this toilet, and we were horrified, fascinated, sort of amused, and we posted the clip online, and it remains, I'm sure, by far the most interacted with, like the highest engagement post we've ever made.
Yeah,
tons of folks from Middle East, South Asia weighed in, and a lot of them had strong,
mostly with hate for us,
reactions to it. Yeah. I mean, people told us we should go to jail for posting this clip from a narrative fictional film. Yeah,
because it was just the dark magic was too powerful. And, you know, again, and that is something I
And that's
do
not
enjoy.
An exaggeration. People said, the exact comment was, you should go to jail.
Yeah.
This is no joke. I feel like people told us we should die. Am I going too far?
I think you might be going a little too far with that, but there were some very extreme,
very passionate comments, indeed. Yeah. And that's something, you know, I don't know. I feel like the composition of horror films on Netflix has changed since we started doing this show. And now there's like a lot more international films than there used to be, where it used to be kind of special when we came across an international film. And then we got to a point where it's like, man, every film is an international film. Give me a Canadian film.
Wasn't Anti-Birth a Canadian film? I think so.
I mean, one of the joys of doing the show has been watching those international films that I would never otherwise have seen, films that have 75 reviews on Letterboxd, and it's like, yeah, this is a Filipino film about Catholic schoolgirls being haunted by a ghost. And sure, you've seen this movie before, but have you seen it in the Philippines?
Yeah, and there was for me there was a lot of fatigue there too, which was disappointing to feel because it's like I normally am like excited about international film, but I started to see too many of the same tropes repeat themselves and really get an idea of like the kind of quality production we were going to get mm-hmm. from some of these films. And a lot of the time it was like Dabbe 4. It's like it's a sequel to a sequel to a sequel to a franchise
that
was born internationally.
Which is something we decided to embrace early on, and I'm glad we did. Like, just the idea of dropping into a franchise in the middle. That was a fun part of the A to Z model, mm-hmm. was we would just... It was like, and we made an intentional decision, like, if Dabbe 4, The Possession, comes up next in A to Z order, are we going to watch Dabbe 1 to 3 first? And we all said, no.
Well, we did argue about this sometimes.
We did, but
I remember like the tenet of like, I don't know, the example that I used early on, because the landscape was very different when we first started this, and there were a lot more like major Hollywood movies, like from the 80s and like 90s. Like
The Astronaut's Wife.
Yeah. But like, no, but I remember being like, okay, well, if like we get to H and it's Hellraiser 3, and you've never seen Hellraiser 1 or 2, don't watch Hellraiser 1 or 2. Let's just watch Hellraiser mm-hmm. 3.
Yeah. And I think that contributed to a beautiful experience for Dabbe, The Possession.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Okay, one more highlight before we move on. And this goes literally to the origin of the show, Spawn. I love that I continue to think about Spawn. We've continued to talk about Spawn and Todd McFarlane across 7 years. Like, when I was listening to the Devil and Father Immort episode, and it was when I had first discovered the Cartoonist Kayfabe interview with Todd McFarlane, which was weirdly a huge inspiration to me in the very long journey of me like doing more creative stuff on mm-hmm. my own, like the comics that I'm doing. It
R.I.P. at Piss Corps, my god.
Yeah, dude. Man, that's a whole separate topic that I can't even get into right now. But but Spawn, weird fucking movie. Terrible movie. Terrible movie.
Awful.
Awful. But what a perfect note to start this all on.
As a test run, yeah.
Yeah, in the sense that, like, we got memes out of it. We got a weird interest in Todd McFarlane out of it. Like, Chris and I still talk about Todd all the time.
He's an inspirational figure to me.
He's very inspirational.
Real talk, though. Real truth. Confessional. Big brother confessional time.
Uh-huh.
Never liked the idea of starting with Spawn. Didn't even know when we were recording it that show was ever going to be released.
Oh.
Arguably, shouldn't have been released.
I did re-listen to it recently, and I think I would agree with your argument there.
But it, just because I didn't really think it... I don't know. Starting...
What was the rating system then? It was like thumbs up or thumbs down. We didn't have View It, Cue It, or Screw It then.
I think we
did. Came up with.
Didn't we? Did. Was it second episode?
But also Spawn was my idea. And I also think like I thought of it as like a test run. I didn't think that was going to be a thing that would actually get released. However,
it was fine.
Worth it.
Happy accident.
Why did it get released?
Because we had it and it was fine.
Yeah.
And we were so excited by doing our first episode ever.
Yeah, I mean, going to say, didn't Chris make that episode 000?
Those first few episodes, I was so proud of. It was such a novelty to hear us talking about horror movies. Yeah. I mean, I listened to Spawn probably 10 times before the episode even came out. And I was like, wow. Oh my God, this is so good. Well, this is
a hallmark of podcasts that, like, I feel like you guys don't listen to as many, and I hate to use this term, but it's true, like bad movie podcasts or like flop movie podcasts or whatever.
I don't listen to a lot of podcasts in general.
They all, I can't think of a single one that I listen to. I've listened to some that have been running for almost 15 years. I can't think of a single one where it didn't start off really fucking rough and they're like, don't go back. Don't listen to our archives. We had no idea what we're doing. We were all drunk. Like, we didn't figure out our dynamics or anything. And yet, I still, every once in a blue moon, will queue up that Spawn episode and listen to a few minutes of it. It's embarrassing, but it's funny. Like, I'm thinking about where we were at in that journey, taking our first step, and I'm able to feel kind toward those earlier years.
Yeah. And I think that's common to serialized entertainment really at any level of production. Like, I can think of so many TV shows where people are like, just skip the first or second season because it took them a while to kind of like dial it in. It's just
that's kind of part of the game when you're not putting all your chips and all your creative energy and everything on like a single, you know, like a book or movie or single installment thing. If you're doing a serialized form of media, it's just going to take a little while to dial it in unless you're really, really good at what you're doing, which we weren't.
Well, know? So again, not to kill the mood or be a Debbie Downer or anything, but like, I feel like in some ways we had our shit dialed in the earlier episodes in a way that we don't now. Like, doing the 1920 London episode, I don't know if I've had more fun in my life. That was such a fun episode. And we were recording live, and I had the fucking soundboard, so I was playing those JQs in real time.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And you were killing us
and
too.
We were laughing so hard, and like, there was a level of sort of,
because
like,
now to pull the curtain back, we add the JQs in post. But at that time you were doing it, so like, we would hear it in our headphones
when someone said J. We were hearing it live every time someone said J, and it was hilarious. And I mean, that sort of, but it's so much effort to produce stuff that way. And you know, after a while you get in a rut and it's not novel anymore, and you're not like trying to see what you can do. You just want to get through the week, and so some of that stuff is the first stuff to fall away. And so in some ways I feel like I'll speak for myself, creatively peaked, like, you know, in the first 30 episodes or so. You know, we had the Halloween episode with Insidious, and I had a whole like spooky story intro with sound effects and stuff. Just a level of production that personally I haven't had the time or energy to live up to since, and I've felt guilty about that for a long time.
Kind of
maybe,
same.
Maybe I mean, I'll bring it back. And yeah. Maybe I'll also edit all that out so it doesn't sound too dark about the future of the show.
I'm optimistic about the future of the show. It's just, yeah, for just talking about me personally and and sort of places where I notice that I'm not quite as, you know, hot as I used to be.
Sure.
Well, you're still very hot to me, Chris.
Thanks.
Oh. Did we wait 7 years for you to create vague sexual tension between you and Chris?
You'll find out on the Discord.
I want to just name some films, and I want to know if you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I love this game.
That's a good one, because I mean, I even had the one from this past year, Look Away, that I was like, what was that movie?
What do you think of when I say Atuad Blanco?
Nothing.
White Coffin.
That's good. He knows Spanish.
What? No, I remember that movie because it's about a white coffin. I know Blanco, but I learned the word you mispronounced it.
Ataud, sorry.
Ataud.
Ataud. Ataud.
And I remember a weird, like, Tarantino-ish shot of a car, like, accelerating towards a camera. And that's
Tarantino-ish, it. I agree. Okay, good job. All right, you got
that's
it.
I have an image from that.
That's early, yeah. First 20 episodes, I'm going to guess.
Well, it's an A, right? So
yeah, that was episode 21. So, okay. So close, man.
So close. So close.
Bleed.
Bateed.
Yep.
This is some wait, don't tell me energy, right?
But I don't remember anything else about it other than that we memed
it. It was the one that was...
Oh, it was about the app, right?
No. That was Bedeviled.
Bedevil, Mr. Bedevil.
Bleed was the one where they're like hanging out, and they're like, let's go to the ruins of the prison. And there's the gratuitous ass shot in like the first 5 minutes because they're like all having dinner, and they're like, let's go to the prison. She's like, I'm going to take a bath. And then she just like takes her pants
off,
like,
yes,
right in front of the camera.
I'll never forget that ass.
Yeah.
I have mostly forgotten that ass. Yeah. This is not really bringing back anything.
Worth revisiting.
You guys remember Blood Glacier?
Yeah,
of course. Yeah.
That's a memorable one, but one that I don't think about.
Mosquito in the Glacier, right?
Basically. It was like The Thing, but in like Scandinavia.
Yeah, it was very The Thing-esque.
Yeah.
Lots of critters in that one.
A lot of like Asylum-level CG.
What about Arquivo?
Arquivo, yeah.
I remember hating that. Oh, it was found footage. They were exploring a hospital or something.
Ruined
hospital.
It was kind of like Grave Encounters, but it was Spanish, I think.
Yeah. Well,
maybe Mexican. I think it was actually Spanish. Spain.
Oh, okay.
But it might have been some other Latin American country.
You got two more shots. Blow my mind.
No, go all night.
Conjuring Spirit.
Nothing.
I remember that title, but I remember nothing else about it.
Zero recall.
I remember nothing about it either. Vietnamese film, young woman haunted by a ghost until she solves a murder mystery.
Yeah, we've never seen that premise.
What was the one that began with the woman running, like jogging to that like Snow Patrol-esque song, and she got hit by a car
Nails.
She winds up in a hospital.
Clinical. Nails. Clinical was one I was going to bring up, though. You remember Clinical?
I do vaguely. I remember Clinical being a very sleepy movie.
Very sleepy. Oh. Very sleepy film.
Well, let's do more.
When you feel like you're not a horror expert, you know, I don't keep up on so many of the like the big modern titles. It takes me a while to get around to stuff. And we know so much.
Yeah.
This one was a theatrical release, The Haunting of Molly Hartley.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. I remember the movie theater. Something happened outside a movie theater, and that's about all I remember.
That's the one where the AV Club described the lead actress as a super waif.
Oh.
That I brought up on the show. It's one of the worst performances I've seen in a semi-professional film.
The movie theater might have actually been, wasn't there a Haunting at Silver Lake?
Haunting at Silver Falls had the movie theater. Okay. It had the historic theater, and then it had
the
ghost twins who were like...
Yeah, that was the exact voice you did to describe them, too. That's great.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Sinister Circle.
Nothing.
Zero recall.
That was a Peruvian Ouija board movie.
Oh. How am I losing? Like, this feels like a game show I'm losing that I should be a shoo-in.
This
for.
Feels like feel like you're on the floor. That game show where they just show you a boat, and if you don't say boat, you get buzzed.
Or what's the one with the people in the circle, right? Was it just called The Circle?
Yeah.
Circle.
Where
circle,
people are kind of like, mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
This is a great idea, Chris, actually.
Just, you know, trying to find, I don't know, we might be running out of really obscure ones here. Everything else is in semi-recent
recent
history.
Recent
memory. Pog Pog Nine Lives.
Oh, of course.
You remember that one? Okay.
The Pog Pog. You got to respect the Pog Pog. I feel like I remember the rules of the Pog Pog.
It's about the funeral etiquette.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah.
Splatter.
Oh
yeah, that's the Roger Corman,
Joe
Dante,
wasn't Corey thing Feldman in that? Or no, I'm thinking
he was in Corbin Nash,
yeah,
which I assumed you remembered.
Legendary episode.
So I didn't bring it up. Game Over. Remember Game Over?
Speaking of like directors, creatives who have interacted with us, didn't the director of Corbin Nash troll us for our opinions on his film?
Oh,
he did on Instagram.
Someone left some comments. They seem suspiciously close to the production of Corbin Nash, but I wouldn't say it was the director.
I thought it was the director or writer, but
no,
yeah.
We would have reached out and said,
we
hey,
got trolled for having opinions on that.
Yeah. Game Over.
Nothing.
Are
we, is that how we're ending the episode?
Game Over.
What was Game Over?
Game Over was, it was about a gamer and she's like being stalked or something, and at the end she does the same scenario like five times or something.
Oh yeah, that was like an
kind
Indian
of a cool
film,
yeah, something like that. My memories of that are so vague.
Yeah There's nothing that will expose your like racism more than trying to identify the country.
I
know, and I've fallen into that. Well, we've all fallen into that trap so many times. It's hard.
How about Eerie?
I can picture the title card.
Nothing.
These are my favorite. These are my favorite titles. Where it's just
where it's just like a word.
Be afraid. Eerie.
It's worse when it's just like a single adjective.
Yes, I love it. I love the single adjective movies. Eerie is the one I alluded to before, the Filipino film about the Catholic boarding school.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't remember a damn.
Give me
thing
one
about
more.
That.
Give me one more.
Yeah, one more. Let's round this up.
Oh, we're wrapping it up. You guys remember The Wretched?
No.
Do I? Give me a hint.
Made in Michigan.
Okay, I thought so.
Oh,
yes, okay. Because that was a big drive-in
hit. The biggest, box office hit of 2020.
It made like $500,000, and it was the top of the box office.
Tom Cruise, Eat Your Heart Out. Highest grossing film of 2020. And yeah, I mean, I think that's it. Everything else is probably in too recent history for us to have forgotten. So.
Yeah.
Look Away. Anyone remember that one?
Yeah, I think you brought that up last episode, maybe. Mm. Maybe you said it was your favorite Amon movie of the year.
Oh, well, damn. What else is there to say?
I think that about wraps up our journey down memory lane. I mean, it's been lovely recapping just some of it, just the tip of the iceberg, really, all things considered.
Mm-hmm. Just the tip.
You can talk about interviewing Dee Wallace. Amazing. A queen, a legend.
I meant to bring that up. That was also, I mean, unequivocally a highlight.
Beautiful.
That was great. Anytime, you know, we started to feel like real media, that was fun. remember when we got mentioned in Variety?
Oh, that was huge. That was
wild. That was wild.
Fucking
British Armed Forces Radio or something.
Yeah. You guys left me for fucking dead while I was in the waiting room, in the Zoom room, and you were just going to go on ahead without me.
We were not in control of the waiting room. That was the British Armed Forces.
I was
fault.
Very concerned about you, but there was only so much I could do because I was on the mic speaking to the armed forces.
Yeah,
you know, the
all
fucking,
of them.
The old rooster in Chicken Run. That's who I was talking to. RAF. I was talking to the RAF. I felt like Colin Firth in The King's Speech.
Oh my god.
Oh man.
I don't think it was that high pressure situation that the text didn't, but I could have texted you guys too.
So. Yeah, you could. All right. So
that was weird. We've had some. It's been a long, strange trip, as someone says.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like there's at least one very smart point I'm leaving on the table. But I mean, honestly, thanks to the listeners who have, it's a lot of work to produce a show. It's a lot of work to produce 180 episodes or something of a show.
That's crazy to me that it's been that many.
Yeah,
it's crazy that it's been 180 episodes. It's crazy that it's been 7 years. You know, I mean, like last episode, Chris said, we've been doing this for 5 years. We were both like, no, it's been seven.
Yeah. It's been 7 years.
It's a big, crazy blur.
We're all different people than we were when we started the show.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason it's lasted that long is because of the listener support. And it's kept us going. What can you say?
And hey, you know, like our friendship and our, like, let's not discredit our friendship and our love of this genre and love of watching movies in general as far as that goes too. Because, you know, as you said, very much like, I think listenership is crucial to this. We love the people who, for whatever reason, that is still sort of unfathomable to me, listen to this. But also just like, you know, I love that we're friends. Friendships have been strengthened in the process of this, as Chris referenced before, between Chris and Steven.
Yeah, we barely knew each other.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to keep talking.
Yeah.
It's just we're not going to have, y'all aren't going to hear it. We're not going to have microphones.
And maybe for the best sometimes.
And maybe for the best sometimes.
Yeah. And I love that. I mean, personally, I feel like my love for horror has absolutely been strengthened in the process of this. Like, it was something that always fascinated me and was a genre of great interest to me. But I mean, it's certainly become one of my primary interests and primary genres over the course of doing this, not necessarily
that's awesome.
Just as a result of doing the podcast. You know, I think it's just a shift that's come with time. But it's there for sure. And obviously it's going to continue.
Yeah. And it's something that used to be a huge part of my identity that I just kind of took for granted and didn't realize, like, oh, I know a lot about horror.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I need to reach back into, because I went to film school and started watching a lot of, you know, other great stuff, but with kind of shied away from horror. And this podcast has helped me remember that, like, that is my happy place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's been wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of interesting / terrible looking horror movies on Netflix that hopefully I'll make time for myself to discover.
I got you down on the list for Viral already.
Put me down for Viral.
Yeah. When we get to V,
you know?
Oh, you're going to go
I'll
back.
I'll call you up.
You're going to go back to alphabetical order now.
No, maybe we'll go to Z to A. So I'll see you in like 5 years.
So you can finally see Zumbies.
Zumbies, yeah.
Oh. That's another regret. We never watched Zumbies.
Oh, that is a regret.
What can you do? So I mean, Patrick, I'm so glad that you still have the enthusiasm to keep putting out content regularly. Wishing you all the luck. And, you know, we'll be around.
I would be absolutely devastated if you weren't. I'll be bringing in some new folks to join me on a regular basis, so that you have a recurring cast to keep up with, as you have for the last several years. And some other changes are going to be coming, but it's a big shift right now that I'm going to be processing for a little bit, because obviously these two guys are two of my best friends outside of this podcast, and will continue to be. So I'm kind of going to take a little time, figure out what the next steps are, and then we're going to have a bold new era of Amon in 2025. But in the meantime, I'll be missing you guys. It's been a wonderful journey, and I'm glad that we got to do this together.
I trust you to carry the torch, and yeah, we're not, you know, like, to quote a piece of set design in Bo is Afraid, never goodbye, always see you later.
A piece of set design? What's the set design? Is that in like the, is that like graffiti on the wall in the chaotic?
There's a poster in the Sun's memorial in Nathan Lane's house.
Oh.
That made me laugh very hard.
Oh, I gotta rewatch that.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. What can I say?
Well, we'll leave it at that. Happy New Year, happy holidays from all of us. Thank you for joining us for a more indulgent than usual year-end episode for every horror movie on Netflix for the last time for at least a little bit. I'm Patrick.
I'm Chris. Thank you all so much for listening.
And I've been Steven.
Love you guys.
Love you.
Love all of you listening out there. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.